God, the merciful, the compassionate. Hello and welcome to Pure Home with me, Sahar Harju. Well, firstly, before we begin, we'd like to send all of our viewers a warm and heartfelt congratulations on the auspicious occasions of Eid al-Adha, which just passed, and the coming of Eid al-Qadir. Now, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon us, told all the Muslims to seek knowledge from the cradle to the grave. Now, knowledge, we could seek knowledge anywhere, maybe from our parents, from society, from books, and so on. Now, today we'll be speaking about religious education, and of course, we'll have other segments to our program as usual, so you'll definitely want to stay tuned to hear about all that and more. To the program. Well, we're honored to have Samana Madani here with us, who is a researcher to help us better understand religious education. Hello and welcome to the program, Ms. Madani. Okay, well, let's get right into our discussion and talk about religious education. So we'll start off by the Quranic or Arabic terms related to education.
Well, in the name of God, the merciful and the compassionate, I must say that the word education, of course, is the English word for the Arabic term tarbiyat or ta'adib. In other words, for the word tarbiyat in the Holy Quran, we don't have a very good word in English, because as you know, in English we have we run out of words for many concepts. And of course, in the Holy Quran we have the word Rabb as one of the names of God, of Allah Almighty. And the Rab, the root of Rab, comes from Rababiyat, okay? And it doesn't only mean to create something. We sometimes think that God has only created us and left us alone. But this is not what we believe. We believe that God, when He created us, He just gets our hand through different stages of existence. And he sometimes, as I said, the word does not, I mean, I can't say it in English, but...
Maybe they use it less.
So in other words, it's kind of a nourishing, a bringing up, raising up. And it's interesting
for our discipline too.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah, right. Somehow. And for example, in Surah Fatiha, we say Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Mm-hmm. In other words, we say all praise and gratitude is due to Allah, Rabb of all the worlds, not only the human beings. Mm. So all the existence is somehow under the control of Allah Almighty, and He is somehow what you say, bringing up to maturity from the earliest stage to that of the highest perfection, everything, not only the human beings, even the animals, even all the planets, everything.
It's just probably mostly beyond our understanding.
Exactly.
Human
and
beings,
another verse which is really interesting to me is the verse which talks about the parents and how you should submit to your parents and respect them. And it says, رَبَّرْهَمْهُمَا كَمَا رَبَّيَانِ صَغِيرًا. In other words, it means that رَبَّ, oh my Lord, oh my Rab, okay? Have mercy on my parents as they have also رَبَّيَانِ. In other words, the word Rab is used for parents too.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Oh, interesting.
So it's interesting that, in other words, the verb Rabbayani is used for parents.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same verse, we have Rab both for God and for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
to show the exalted position of the parents.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And how they raise up the children, mm-hmm. stage by stage.
Mm-hmm. So basically,
and the importance of their position.
Position, mm-hmm. Of course, that's which we've been told on and on. We've been told so many times, like
exactly.
you said, to after Allah Subhanahu Wa Taala and the Ahlul Bayt and so on. Our parents are
exactly.
in a very, very high position.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have so much more to speak about religious education. So let's go and listen to our story, which is about Imam Ali alayhi salam on the occasion of Eid al Qadir, which is coming. So let's go and listen to that together, and of course we'll be back.
Judge's guest. A man went to Imam Ali's place as an ordinary guest. He stayed at Imam Ali's house for several days. But he was not an ordinary guest. He had a secret, but he didn't talk about it. In fact, he had dispute with another man, and he was waiting for the other man to come so that they could present their dispute to Imam Ali and ask him to act as a judge. Someday the man revealed his secret and talked about the dispute and trial. Imam Ali said, "So you are a party to a suit, aren't you?" The man answered, "Yes." Imam Ali said, "I'm sorry, but I can't let you stay at my house as a guest anymore, because the Prophet has said, whenever a dispute is brought to a judge, the judge must not host either parties. He can host the parties only when both of them are present." Thank you.
Welcome back. Well, we hope you enjoyed our story, and we have Miss Madani here to help us better understand religious education. And so, Miss Madani, continuing on with our discussion, could you give us an overall view of the Western educational paradigm?
The Western educational paradigm has two main sides. From the psychological aspect, we can say that there are three main schools of thought. We have Piaget's cognitive view, we have Freud's psychosexual view, and we have the psychosocial view of Erikson. And according to these views, for example, Freud believes that the sexual part of the human beings are the main things that control our behavior and our emotions and everything. Erikson believes that our social relations and our social experience is what controls ourself, and somehow we could say that it influences our character and everything. And Piaget, of course, he believes that the intellect and the cognitive part is very important. And from the philosophical point of view, we can talk about the existential points. Mm-hmm. And from the in the existentialism paradigm, we have in the in France we have Sartre, in Germany we have Heidegger, and in America we have Arbert. I'm sorry. And they have their own views about, you know, about the characters and everything. But on the whole, we can say in the Western paradigm, the human being, the educational part is divided into the mental education and physical education. Mm-hmm. So mental education is mostly focuses on the mind, and the physical education focuses on the physical part. Mm-hmm. But that is somehow different from the Islamic point.
They seem to have separated them, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Instead of intertwining them. And
In Islam, we have another categorization.
Mm-hmm. Altogether.
Okay.
So moving on to that one, what's the base of the education of human beings according to Islam?
As I said, in the Western paradigm, we have those different concepts which the human character are based on. But according to Islam, the main operating system of the human being is fitra. That is another word which we don't have the right word in English, okay? And this fitra, just like the computer, you know, the main operating system in the computer, we have Windows, DOS, and different kinds of operating systems. In the human being, the main part is fitra, and there are many different layers based on fitra. Mm-hmm. Many different, I mean, if we want to talk about it, I brought a plat, if you show it, on the TV. It's we have qalb, fuad, I don't know, sadr, different parts, and it's so complex. We can't just say it's the physical part and the mm-hmm. mental part. And interestingly, you know, instead of mind, we have fuad. Mm-hmm. And it's, we just have to talk about fuad in another session, maybe. But it's even deeper than heart. Mm-hmm. It's somehow controlling our feelings and our emotions. And
the fuad, you said, is to replace the mind.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's more complicated.
And unlike Freud, who believes that the irrational part of our body is what controls our rational part and everything, mm-hmm. we in Islam believe that all human beings are born, all infants are born in pure fitra. Mm-hmm. And this fitra is what is, in fact, controlling us. And that is why everybody loves good things, that even children like beautiful things, mm-hmm. you know. And it's because of the bad raising up we have that this fitra is somehow, what you call it, is somehow
tainted,
and becomes dirty, and we have to polish it. Mm-hmm. And that is what we call taqwa, you know, by taqwa, by piousness, by these things, by piety, by all the things which are told in religion, I mean, which we're ordered to do in religion, they are to polish this fitra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just
it's
a mirror.
It's like a nurture versus nature, I guess, right?
Nature is not a good word for
no,
fitra.
No, well, there's another misleading translation.
Really, yeah, but as I said, because we are running out of words in English, that's why sometimes it's okay to use other words. But even nature, it's not, I mean, according to the glossary, nature is not what we have it as exactly in Islam.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, on the whole, I could say that unlike the Western paradigm, in Islam, we have a very complex view of human beings. And that is why judging human beings is very different, mm-hmm. difficult, you know. And
so it's a good thing it's not a job for us.
Yeah.
But what I wonder is, like you said, well, our fitra is our origin, our yeah. nature, if you may say, would be pure. But and then it's the upbringing that puts the difference in between us human beings. But what is it? You see a child from birth or at a very, very early age that's more violent or a little bit more rambunctious or a little bit more, personality-wise. How does that work? I mean,
well,
is that upbringing too?
Yeah, of course. I mean,
maybe genes. Right?
Exactly. Not genes. I brought a very interesting book for you to introduce, and it shows that it's called Who's Been Sleeping in Your Head?
Mm-hmm.
The Secret World of Sexual Fantasies. And in this book, it is mm-hmm. mentioned that even before the parents decide to have a child, mm-hmm. even what they have in their mind, I mean, the picture of even the actresses they like, the picture of the actors they like, the I don't know, whatever, the singers,
the thoughts that are
in their mind, even that has an influence on the baby.
Oh, that's so scary. it's out of our control,
we're going to talk about how we can, control those thoughts, because it's interesting that even this Mr. Brett Carr, mm-hmm. He talks about everything, and then he says that, or somehow he shows that they have come to a dead end, and they don't know what to do mm-hmm. about. I mean, he shows the problems. I don't know if I have to. Do you want me to talk about the book right now?
Or? Oh, we can take a break. Why don't we actually show the book? Why don't we zoom in on the book so that maybe our viewers. So it's called "Who's Been Sleeping in Your Head," and it's by Brett Carr, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it seems like an interesting book. Maybe something our viewers might want to look into. And we can talk a little bit more about it when we come back from our break. Okay, well, that's wonderful. All right, so what we can do is we'll go and take a break. And when we come back, it's time for From Here and There, so don't go away. For From Here and There with my colleague Mahdi Babagolzadeh. As usual, he has many interesting news-absorbing pieces for us. Let's see what he has for us today. Mr. Golzadeh, what do you have for us?
Thank you, Mrs. Harju.
You're very welcome.
Well, hello, dear viewers. Welcome to this part of the program, From Here and There. Now, a new study suggests that daily consumption of multivitamin pills may reduce the risk of developing cancer in men. The study followed nearly 15,000 men, mainly doctors aged 50 and over, for more than a decade. According to the Journal of the American Medical Association, an 8% low risk of cancer was noted amongst the participants who were assigned to take a multivitamin daily. Now, the study also indicated that the risk of dying from cancer was also 12% lower amongst amongst men who took the daily multivitamins. Scientists concluded that following a healthy, balanced diet, rich in a wide variety of fruit and vegetables, is needed to provide the body with a full range of vitamins and minerals. Now, if you can't get your vitamins or minerals naturally, then you may opt for multivitamin pills, but buy them from recommended stores. Welcome back. Now, a couple of days back, I overheard my mother wanting to buy new pots and pans. Let me read out for you what I found on these expensive Teflon-coated pans. Now, pots and pans and other cookware made with a non-stick coating or Teflon have been controversial for many years. The main chemical in non-stick coatings is perfluorooctanoic acid, or PFOA, which is known to cause cancer. The question has been whether enough PFOA gets into the human body from pans to poles a risk. Some experts believe that PFOA and as many as 15 other chemicals can be released when cooking with these coatings, particularly at high heat. Other concerns involve whether the chemicals can get into food once the surface becomes scratched and nicked over time. Now, what should you do? Don't use non-stick pans to cook foods over 300 degrees and toss them when the coating gets scratched. And don't buy those cheap ones, at least buy them off a good branded company. Now, there are also some safer substitutes like the ones made from glass, cast iron, copper and ceramic, or porcelain coated pans. There are also lines of non-stick cookware made with other surface coatings, often ceramic, titanium or both, that are PFOA free. Now, most cleaning products are based on artificial chemicals, and some of those chemicals have been linked to cancer and other health issues. Experts say chemicals in our indoor air may have concentrations of up to 100 times higher than outdoor air. Air fresheners are amongst the worst offenders. They contain substances like isopar, which is deodorized kerosene, which is toxic to the lungs, liver and kidneys. Be particularly careful when using anything you spray in the air or wipe on touchable surfaces. Amongst cleaners, oxygen bleach cleansers are particularly dangerous. You also want to watch out for products containing chlorine bleach or ammonia. Neither of these are good to breathe. The worst practice, experts say, is spraying chlorine bleach in the shower or bathroom, where the steam makes you more likely to breathe it in. So never use these toxic chemicals in the bathroom, or at least clean them out thoroughly with water. Now, what can you do? There are lots of good green cleaning products on the market that use natural ingredients to scrub, disinfect and shine. Look for products containing citrus oils and enzymes. Well, that was it from me, and thank you for watching another episode of From Here and There. As usual, you can visit us at sahatv.tv. You can also email us as well at purehome@sahatv.tv. Or you can call us directly on 0098-2122-162887 or 0098-2122-162854. Back to you, Ms. Archie.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Godzilla.
About the second article, I found it interesting about the pots and the pans, because I actually went and I researched a little bit because I have a little girl and I wanted to know what I should cook for her in what kind of pan. And I think the iron or the copper would probably be a good way to go, because you're actually getting those minerals in your food, right? I mean, I was a little reluctant about that, because I thought, what if it's...
The porcelain-coated or the ceramic-coated are the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's made out of metal, but on top of it there's a layer of ceramic. Or porcelain?
Well, would the metal be iron, or would it be like iron or copper and then porcelain on top?
On top, yeah. There's a layer.
Oh, I see.
It's the best one. Or even you can use glass if you want.
Mm-hmm. So, but the ones that are the actual...
The Teflon coating is the one. Non-stick Teflon ones, they're dangerous. Mm-hmm. If they're scratched or in high heat.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, let's go and take a look at our clip together, which is also about Imam Ali.
یکی بود یکی این نبود، غیر از خدا هیچ کس نبود، ولایتی بود به نام شکرستون، مردمونش همه خوب و مهربون. بله بازم گذرمون به شکرستون افتاد و وقت یه قصه دیگه رسید. ها قصه کی؟ قصه خیال باف و کوزه روغن. جونم براتون بگه یه چوب
انیمیشن ایران
هولده. Iranian animation has been worked on professionally for 5 to 6 decades. It is said that Iranian animation has a style of its own and has received many international awards. However, most of them have been artistic animations, which means that a person creates a work based on his or her own interest in animation. Such animations have received many awards, and some of them are really masterpieces. However, animation in the world has a compound definition. It is both industry and art. The turning point of animation in the world was when its industrial aspect gained more power. As you know, in any industry, the most important thing is the production line and the plan, which tells us how to produce something from the beginning to the end. The biggest problem in Iranian animation in the past few decades has been the lack of a production line. When you define the production line and the standard production line, everything is determined from the sponsoring organization, which helps produce the output of a product, to the arrangement of human resources, to the type of training these people need, and also the type of equipment each department must own. Everything must be defined and implemented based on international standards. Iranian animation lacked such a thing. It is about a decade or more exactly, about 6 to 7 years, that a production line is defined in Iranian animation. It is just about 6 or 7 years that the need for managing human resources and the correct arrangement of them and the timing and the type of output have become important in Iranian animation. Many organizations have made efforts during these decades until we achieved this success. It is wrong to say that this success was achieved in 5 or 6 years. Several years of experience and training are behind this. The Institute for the Intellectual Development of Children and Young